Okay, what you're looking for is the outline of the Old Testament there. And I don't know where it is in your section. It should start off with...
Quite a revelation.
Nope. Go to the next page.
You are... We kind of went through some of this stuff. You are on 11 or 12, that's right. Here you are, page 12.
Now we're all the same, aren't you? Okay, we'll look at 4,000 years of history rather briefly here. Creation. First word is the creation. The Bible teaches in Genesis 1, throughout the entire Bible, that God created everything there is about 6,000 years ago. And that currently everything is wearing out and not improving. And Geraldine would say a hearty amen to that. There are three stages to the creation: the fall, the flood, and the fanning out, if you want to be funny. The fall, God created, started with two people, placed them in a perfect garden called Eden, and Satan entered into the garden with one purpose: to lure Adam and Eve into disobeying God and to become cursed by God. And they did disobey, but God provided two lambs to take the place of Adam and Eve in death. If you remember, God says to Adam, "The day that ye eat thereof, ye shall surely what?" Alright. If those lambs had not died, they would have died physically. They did die spiritually, though. But those lambs were so that Adam and Eve did not have to die. From then on, God's promise was for a future Messiah to come who would one day take away the sins of the whole world, not just of one person at a time. Two, the flood. About 4,600 years ago, a worldwide flood occurred that wiped out all land-dwelling creatures, including mankind. Everyone died except for Noah and his family, who were saved because they simply obeyed God. They built an ark which contained two of every kind of land animal. It was the flood that fashioned the continents into their current shapes and lifted the mountains to their current heights. Some people say, how did the dinosaurs get on the ark and stuff? Well, baby dinosaurs did. You don't have to put mammoth, huge monsters on there. You just have baby ones. And it's been pretty well predicted that it was during the flood that animals learned how to hibernate and just go to sleep for 3-4 months at a time so that you didn't have to feed them all. The fanning out, and that was at the Tower of Babel where people were spread out to where they are now. And that all happened rather rapidly due to the confusion of tongues. Secondly, B, the patriarchs. Patriarchs, P-A-T-R-I-A-R-C-H-S. Patriarchs, it basically means the fathers, the founding fathers of the nation of Israel, Abraham. He's the cornerstone of Israel's history and of your Old Testament. He lived in an ungodly city called Ur, but he decided to obey God's word and leave Ur to follow God's will for his life. When God promised Abraham they would give him as many children as the number of the stars, Abraham didn't doubt, but simply believed God and became the author of the race of people called the Jews, who, because of Abraham, are the people of God. They're not the people of God because of their works or because of their righteousness. They're the people of God because of Abraham. Two. Second is the son of Abraham, which is Isaac. That's the promised son of Abraham. And you move then to Jacob and his 12 sons. You'll find Genesis, basically, about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Okay? Jacob gets his name changed to Israel and becomes a great man of faith and example. The 12 sons of Israel were the ones who started the 12 tribes of Israel. The bondage in Egypt. The descendants of Abraham were called Jews. These Jews went to dwell in Egypt, but were enslaved by the Egyptians for over 400 years. That runs from Genesis 30 all the way to Exodus chapter 3. Then came the Passover. That was the breaking point for Egypt. Up until that time, Egypt as a nation thought it was invincible. As an empire, they thought that they could be they could do anything they want. But when the blood of that lamb was shed and the death angel came in and killed all the firstborn, all the way up to Pharaoh's own son, it broke the power of Egypt. And it's a great illustration. All of these are great illustrations, but this is a great illustration of the power of the blood of Jesus, our lamb, to break the power of the world over us and of sin and the devil. E, the law. Now you start and you go from Exodus 20 all the way to Deuteronomy 32, and you have what God calls His law. The giving of God's law is the second most important gift to the sin-cursed world, next to the granting of forgiveness through Jesus, the Lamb of God. The law of God is perfect, and it enables all people and all nations to live safely and wisely. Without it, there is only confusion, corruption, anarchy. God's law, F, living in the promised land. You move rather rapidly. They are wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, and then they come into what is now known as Palestine, or where Israel now is, in their own land. Abraham had been promised a piece of land known as Canaan. It was over 400 years later when Joshua led the nation of Israel into Canaan and conquered all its inhabitants, which is covered in the book of Joshua. That is where Israel now dwells and always will be Israel's land. During the time in the Promised Land, you have two periods called the Judges and the Kingdom Age. The Judges last for about 400 years, and the Kingdom Age lasts for about 400 years. The Judges were special people who governed the nation of Israel before the coming of the kings. And they spent about 400 years until King Saul took the throne. Then you have the Kingdom Age. Israel became a kingdom under three great kings called Saul, David, and Solomon. And then there were many other kings after them, 1 Samuel all the way to the books of 2 Chronicles. G, the captivity. After about 400 years in the Promised Land, the people of Israel lost interest in following the God of the Bible and became totally idolatrous. God gave them over to their enemies, who came into their cities, took all the healthiest, the strongest, and most beautiful away to distant lands as slaves once again. They had come out of slavery in Egypt, and here they were slaves again. Israel had gone full cycle and would have to wait for 70 years before they could begin to rebuild their lives back under God, which was Jeremiah and Lamentations while they were in captivity. Then you have something called the exile. So you have when I call it the captivity, it is the taking away of the captivity, not the total time. It was a big, big thing for Israel to be humbled again. But then the exile, when they are actually taken away and then left there for those 70 years. And you have the book of Esther describing life as it was when they were captives, and then Ezra and Nehemiah describing them returning. Following that, you have a period of time of about 600 years of what we call the prophets, which until the Messiah, and they all pointed to Israel's struggle with idolatry and their need for the coming of the Messiah. Now, key people in the Old Testament. You've got Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel. These are two brothers. Abel worshipped God with the sacrifice of lambs. Cain worshipped with his own good efforts. When God only appreciated Abel's lamb, Cain ended up killing his brother out of envy. Now, envy is the key word because that's why the Pharisees killed Jesus and became the first murderer. Then came Noah. Then a man named Nimrod. Genesis chapter 10. Nimrod began, again, false worship after the flood. He begins a worship and begins everything that happens right after the flood was an attempt to try to restore the religious attitude towards God that was before the flood. It is amazing how old habits die hard. So he was in open rebellion to God's word. He built Babylon, attracted all the world to worship his false gods, which are the basis for all the world's religions still today, including Catholicism. Except for biblical Christianity. The only thing that's in direct contrast to Nimrod's Babylonian religion is biblical Christianity. We have Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the children of Israel, Moses the lawgiver, God protects Moses from birth when he is taken in by Pharaoh's daughter and made into the adopted son of the king of Egypt. Moses, his name means drawn out, which is when he was... discovered there in the water, it was by just divine accident, I guess you would say, or it was just guidance that Moses' mom put him in a basket in the river. It's kind of a crazy thing to do, but he was hoping that, or she was hoping that Pharaoh's daughter would see the baby, have compassion, and protect the baby. And when she picked him up and pulled him out of the water, she would, I'm going to call him drawn out. That's what Moses means. Moses later discovers that he is a Jew and renounces his position as an Egyptian so that he can be with his people, which at that time were slaves. He ultimately leads Israel out of Egypt to the promised land, to the land promised them, called Canaan, modern Palestine, where Israel is today. God used Moses to pen the first five books of the Bible, which are referred to as the Law of Moses. Then you have a man named Joshua. For about 25 years, Joshua led Israel into conquering the land called the Promised Land. The judges, these are leaders whom God used to bring Israel back to God each generation. There was no king, so God used people of authority to keep Israel sort of understanding what was right and wrong. The kings. God set up a kingdom with Saul as its first king. Now, was he God's first choice for king? Who was God's intended design to be the king of Israel first? Mm-hmm. And it's amazing, other people's mistakes cost David 7 years where he had to run for his life, but God still allowed it. And it made David a better man. It wasn't the nightmare that David probably thought he would end up being. It actually made him a better man, living in those caves for 7 years. But you have after him was King David, followed by Solomon. After them, the kingdom splits in two, and each kingdom lasts for no more than 400 years. When I say each kingdom, I'm talking about the northern 10 tribes and the southern 2 tribes. So you got northern Israel and southern Israel, and when they split, they don't last for any more than 400 years before they are taken back into slavery or exile. Job. One of the most important books in the entire Bible is that of Job, which deals with the reasons for suffering, tragedy, and shows God's hand in everything we go through. One of the most neglected books in the Bible is the book of Job, but it shouldn't be. Daniel the prophet. There are many prophets used by God to write much of the Bible, but Daniel stands out among them. He is used to write about in the clearest way about the coming of the Messiah and the end times. And then the Messiah. Jesus is the whole theme of the Bible. From the first lamb slain in the Garden of Eden, God has been pointing sinners to the only substitute acceptable, and that of an innocent lamb. God became flesh, gave his life freely on the cross, was buried, and then after those 3 days, he rose again, ascended to heaven, victorious over both sin and death. That makes him our only way to heaven by faith. Now, in all of the books, man is the ultimate theme, or suffering is the ultimate theme, or whatever. But the Bible as a whole, the theme of the Bible is the Messiah. Okay? P. Satan, the devil. The Bible's a balanced book. It also describes this archenemy. Satan's name used to be Lucifer, an archangel who turned away from God seeking to dethrone the Lord. He was kicked out of heaven, but still works destruction in God's creation. He only seeks to destroy what God has created and sets himself up as God. He is doomed to burn forever with his followers in the lake of fire. Somebody says, what was hell made for? Hell was made for the devil and his angels. It wasn't made for humans. Devils. Devils are what we call demons, and were created by Satan to help him work against all that God does in this world. Devils, demons, are not fallen angels. Demons are created beings by Satan. Are angels. Angels are spiritual beings that minister for God here on earth. They only do what God wants done, not what we want done. So don't waste your time trying to talk to them. All right, the doctrinal fundamentals taught in the first 12 chapters of Genesis. Yes, sir. That's the next. It's the new page I gave you. The next page after that. It actually has.
Oh yeah.
Are you with me? All right. Now we're on page. What is it on yours? 18. Okay. All right. Doctrinal fundamentals. A doctrinal fundamental. It is imperative that this is understood as a doctrine. Creation. Most of Christianity has given up on believing in miraculous creation. They will not accept the Bible's statement that in the beginning God created. Most every commentary you pick up, modern commentary, unless it's done by a creationist and a Bible believer, is going to be, well, we know that this is symbolic language. And it's not. It's a doctrinal fundamental. When Jesus spoke of Genesis and he spoke of creation, he spoke of it as being a literal doctrinal event that everybody automatically believed. B, the existence and the character of God. If you can change the character of God, you can teach anything you want. If you can make God out to a liar, and that's what a Calvinist will teach you. Calvinists would teach you that God is so sovereign that he can lie and get away with it. So you can change the character of God to fit your own design. You can make God in your own image. But the doctrinal thing that's taught in Genesis is that the character of God is immutable, is what the word is. It's unchangeable. See, the rapture. All the way from Genesis chapter 5, you have the teaching of the rapture, where Enoch is caught up by God. You have the wages of sin. Genesis 3, 4, and 5. The wages of sin is death. It shows up right there. E, the curses of this life. Genesis 3 and 4 talk about childbirth pain, low yield production of crops, entropy, things wearing out, fighting to stay ahead of death, the sinful nature passed upon all descendants, the woman being in subjection under her father, and then her husband, the need for governments to control its people. Yuck, 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 yuck. It's all called curse. F. Yeah. C was the rapture. It's okay. I gotta be careful what I say. I might just blow you out of the water. The resurrection from the dead, doctrinal fundamental, eternal life, taught in the first 12 chapters. Somebody could go on living forever. Then you have the three families of the earth, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Shem, S-H-E-M, Ham, and Japheth, J-A-P-H-E-T-H. Shem are the Orientals, and that includes Japan, Korea, Vietnam, China, all the way through. Ham is Africa, Japheth, European. I, the origination and purpose of multiple languages. You have, where did our languages come from? They didn't come from one language, they came from a division, an automatic mature division of languages there in Genesis chapter 11. Yes? Howdy, Captain. Yeah, no, we need a doctor's slip after this. Let's see. We don't have... Okay, we're on this page. Next page. He'll find that page for you. All right. J, the fathers of all founding nations, Genesis 10, 11 are what's called the foundation nations. They are, when we talk about the Medes and the Persians, where'd they come from? Genesis 10 and 11. We talk about Gog and Magog. Those are pretty important. That's up by Russia. Those nations, every source, or what do you want to say, the foundation for our modern nations are found in Genesis 10 and 11. What we're looking at is those first 12 chapters of Genesis describe some of the most incredible fundamentals that settle truths for our worldview, so that our ability to look at the world and go, all right, there is method to this madness. There is background to what we're looking at. They didn't just appear. They haven't all evolved. There actually has been something going on. K, the Messiah. The Messiah. Who he will be, why he will come, and how he will come is taught in the first 12 chapters of Genesis. All right. L, the world consists of only two religions, those working their way to eternal life and those who have obtained it by God's grace through the blood of the Lamb. M, God does and will punish sin, as he did with the flood. Sodom and Gomorrah, God, just shows that God has... He has a limit. N. God's grace is shown to sinners who trust God's provided substitute, as with Abraham sacrificing Isaac. Abraham thought, well, I guess I do, but God wanted to teach him, no, I will take your place. I'll take the place by being a lamb myself. But the difference between Abraham and God is Abraham's son didn't have to die while God's son did. O. The calling out of the Old Testament, and here's the word, church, which was Israel, out of Egypt. It was a typology. P. God has clear laws about what is right and wrong, and they're not up to individual opinions and interpretations. And God expects man, Q, to take responsibility for his own messes. We have to have governments and courts that are law-based to maintain justice. Alright, now we continue. I will give you several outlines of Genesis just so that we work through this thing. And you see sort of, with these bits and pieces, you start to see, and that's just, Genesis, you'll see just the depth of things that are being discussed. And we just keep, I'll go through it three times. The reason why I'm going through three different outlines is so that you get this idea of what's there. If I just gave it to you one time, it wouldn't mean anything, but each time we go through a little bit different. General outline of Genesis. Again, we start off with the what? You're always going to start with the creation. That's why Genesis means the beginnings. You have the creation of the world, you have the creation of man, and you have the fall, the introduction of sin. After the creation, you move to the fall of man. And the fall of man is a big enough thing that God really takes a lot of time for you to see where we went wrong. And it was our own desire. When Eve decides to disobey God, it's because she wants to. And when God turns, when Adam turns his back on God, it's because he wants to. He says, "My wife is more important to me than God." The results. Then we move to number three: the results of unrestrained human nature. When you see that, you have Cain killing Abel. You have guys taking multiple wives. You have just wickedness, as you find in Genesis chapter 6, he says that the hearts of man was only evil continually. So unrestrained human nature is wrong. We've got to have restraint. Then we turn to the judgment of the flood, Genesis 6 through 9. You have the causes of the flood, man's sin. The judgment of the flood, a lot of water. The flood itself and how long it lasted. The results of the flood were, you have the continents rearranged. You have the world completely wiped out except for eight people. Yes? And then at the end of that thing, it goes from bad to worse. They get off the ark, and then Ham commits an awful sin and brings a curse upon himself and his children. Then Roman number 5, the judgment on the Tower of Babel. The people were attempting to restore a pre-flood worship. They were trying to create this tower. It's possible that they were trying to build something high enough so that if a flood did come, that their religion would still survive. It's kind of funny. They would gladly die to protect their religion. And, you know, it's kind of funny. You don't have to protect your religion. You don't have to protect Jesus. You don't have to protect the Bible. The Bible will stand. But a lot of people, they will die to protect their religion. It's kind of funny. But they were building this huge tower, and at the top of the tower were images to all the stars and demonic angels and things. And they were trying to protect that and restore the worship of demonic worship that was before the flood. Then Genesis chapter 10, you have what are called family lines. You have a lot of we have the founding nations of the world, and then the judgment on all the family lines. That's the Tower of Babel. They are divided. And God divides it in order to keep them apart. He intends not to unify the whole world yet. And yet, what does the world want to do? They want to unify themselves against God. Now, that's early history. It's kind of, I don't like calling it that, but it is the beginning. Now we move to the patriarchal history. So Genesis 1 to 11 is early history. Genesis 11, 10 through chapter 50 is patriarchal. You'll deal with four people. Actually, five, but four main people. You'll deal with Abraham. Next one's Isaac. Number three, Jacob and Esau. Roman number four, the life of Joseph. With Abraham, you get introduced to Abraham as he is called out to come out of Ur, the Chaldees. And Chaldees is where? Where are the Chaldeans? Babylon. All right. We just read there in Daniel talking about the astrologers and the Chaldeans. Abraham came from Babylon. God called him out of it. Okay? God makes a covenant with Abraham, and he makes specific, special promises to Abraham. Sarah gets a little impatient. She hears Abraham constantly talking about God giving him a baby, and so she can produce nothing, so she decides to come up with a plan, and the plan ruins history for the last 4,000 years. But you have Ishmael coming up, and Ishmael is still running wild. As a matter of fact, England is finally coming to grips with the fact that they have a time bomb on their hands. They have radical Muslims there who are talking about overthrowing, absolutely blatantly overthrowing Western civilization. God fulfills his promise not through Ishmael, but through Isaac. And then God's test of love and obedience to Abraham. God asks Abraham, do you love me? Are you willing to trust me? And then give me back your son. And that was the highest, hardest test you could ever ask anybody. Then number two, the life of Isaac. Basically just goes through the family of Isaac, the failure of Isaac, and then the failure of Esau coming in there at the end. But we'll talk about that in a second. First of all, Isaac was this perfect kid. He's probably a spoiled kid. Raised in a home with probably one of the best daddies you could grow up with. Loved his mom. Grew up, but he was an only child, and probably had so much attention. And it shows in his later years where it's very hard for him to get along with others. Isaac, this promised child, Isaac is, there are a lot of types of Christ, a lot of shadows of Christ, but Isaac fails in his dealings with his wife and dealings with Jacob and Esau. And it hurts Esau. Esau never gets right with God, and I'm not sure that we can blame Isaac for that. But the home life was a mess. Isaac's not as big a person as Jacob is. You have three people. When God meets Abraham at the burning bush, he says, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He always uses that phrase. But Isaac doesn't have that big a part. Jacob does. Roman numeral 3, the life of Jacob and Esau. Right off the bat, Jacob steals Esau's, it should be birthright and blessing. Okay? Birthright was, Esau was the oldest, and so Esau, by birth, should have responsibility for the family. And he doesn't care about that. He instantly gives that away to, you take responsibility, I want to go have fun. But Jacob later on steals the blessing, which is God's spiritual blessings. There's one thing to ignore physical things or to have your own plans, and your dad's trying to pass on the business to you, and you're not interested, you want to go and do your own thing. It's one thing to reject your parents' guidance. It's another thing to miss God's guidance in your life. And that was what was called the blessing, where Isaac would put his hand upon the shoulders of his son and say, the blessings of God be upon you. And I pray God would use you. And for Esau to say, that doesn't matter to me or anything, was pretty bad. And Jacob steals that. And it actually causes Esau to hate him for 20-some-odd years. Jacob, he runs to a place called Haran, which is where his uncle Laban lives. And he meets the woman of his life, which is Rachel. And he ends up not with Rachel, but who's he end up with marrying? Yeah, I mean, can you imagine? I think this book's probably one of the most funny books that you could ever read. You couldn't imagine making a movie that would adequately portray the Bible. But to go through a marriage ceremony and wake up the next morning and it's not the woman you married, that has got to be hilarious. When Jacob does finally return, his mom is dead. The woman who tried to protect him and tried to get him ahead missed out on seeing him finally get right with God and get ahead. But Jacob does return, and he gets converted. Now, where does he get converted? Where does his life change take place? Where timeline, in timeline, place, time, in a tent where he's facing off with his brother Esau coming with 400 armed men. And Jacob finally surrenders, says, I can't meet this. God, I need your blessing. God says, now you ask, okay, I'll help you. And he humbles Esau, and Esau doesn't fight him. But Jacob learns to depend upon God. As a matter of fact, it's when he becomes crippled and he has to walk on a crutch. He lives in Canaan, and then Esau comes up, and Esau, because he's a son of Isaac, which is a son of Jacob, he gets blessed. And this is amazing. Ishmael is a son of Abraham, and God blesses that man. You don't mess with either Ishmael or Isaac or the descendants of Abraham. You don't fight them. You don't go against them. You don't mess with them. But Esau, he has some pretty important people. They're called dukes instead of kings. And God lists the continuing history of Esau. And Esau turns into... there are other kingdoms that actually become enemies of Israel later on. Moab and Edom from the descendants of Esau. Then the life of Joseph. For the last 13 chapters or so, you have Joseph. Joseph had some problems in his family. Joseph was born when Jacob was not converted. So there's a lot of problems in the family. In his old age, Jacob loved Joseph more than he loved the rest of the kids. And that created a major problem. What do we call that? We call that favoritism. Thank you. I was trying to think of the word. And favoritism is a nightmare. All right. We hate it when our teacher favors a certain student over the rest of the class. And it stops the class from really being able to enjoy and learn. And same thing in his home. And Joseph didn't, you know, Joseph didn't deserve the problems that he got, but he got the brunt end. Now look at the next word, the refining of Joseph. Joseph then goes through a refining process when he is sold off as a slave to the Midianites. He ends up as a servant, a slave to Pharaoh, and then goes from slavery to prison. That's called refining. We don't like that. We would rather for God to refine us with a beach and with a nice car and refine us with the nice things. But God doesn't do that. God knows what He's doing. Yes, sir.
So refining is kind of like
the No, to refine something is to make it purer. When you refine gold or refine silver, you heat it in order to get rid of the impurities. And that's what God was doing in Joseph's life. And then the salvation of Jacob's family. The whole purpose of Joseph going through all that was for others. Now, he got a benefit from it. But Joseph, he was there to save much people, save his family from the famine that was really, really, really bad. All right, now you have a neat little page there. I thought I'd give you it's out of my Thompson chain. It actually shows you just Abraham and his travels. There are two sections to the thing. You've got one main graphic, which is this thing, which is the land of Palestine all the way up to Ur of the Chaldees. That area is his main life. But then you can zoom in on this left-hand portion is a zoom in on what we call the Dead Sea, or the Sea of the Plains. And this sort of just traces his footsteps. I'm not sure if you can get much out of it, but it's a neat reference just to see. He traveled a lot. There's a lot of things that happened in the life of Abraham. A great Bible, if you like a Bible that has a lot of reference information, is called the Thompson Chain Reference Bible. I was talking to Romica. And Romica in Romanian has a Thompson Chain Reference Bible. I was delighted. Somebody had spent years translating the notes that are in the Thompson Chain Reference into Romanian. All right, last outline. 50 chapters, 50 sentences. Chapter by chapter outline of the events of Genesis. Genesis chapter 1, you have the 6 days of creation. Chapter 2, particularly, it's the creation of man. Now, this is how you summarize chapters. You were to take a book, of Matthew. You need, one day, you need to sit down, and after reading chapter 1 of Matthew, you need to summarize it. and the best summarization would be the genealogy of Jesus Christ, his family history. Chapter 2, the wise men. Chapter 3, John the Baptist. Each one of those would be phrases that would jar your memory and remind you of all the things that are in that chapter. Okay, it's like a label. When you look at a bunch of filing cabinets, they put a label on the front that tells you what's inside that filing cabinet. So, each one of these filing cabinets, chapter 1, deals with the 6 days of creation. 2, the creation of man. Chapter 3, where sin came from, the origin of sin. Chapter 4, family values, with a question mark. Problems between Cain and Abel. Chapter 5 is family history. All of a sudden you say, so-and-so had a son, and he lived so long, and he died. And then so-and-so, he had a son at such-and-such an age, and then he lived for so long, and he died. So you have family history. 1,600 years of sin conquering people's lives. The wages of sin is death, and it just says, and he died, and he died, and he died. Chapter 5. Chapter 6, the call of Noah to save his family. Chapter 7, that's the worldwide flood. If I were to say just chapter 7, you ought to go, that's the chapter that deals, that's just all about the water of the flood. Chapter 8, a new beginning for the world. Things starting over, the water draining, you got new continents, you got new mountains, everything starts over. Chapter 9, God makes a promise, or God requires Noah to take responsibility for the messes that man creates, and that means you're going to have to create human government. You're going to have leaders and have laws that restrain man and his imagination. 10. Noah's family and the three human races are described in chapter 10 and where they go. Chapter 11, you have the Tower of Babel and the beginning of Abraham's genealogy. Chapter 12, the calling of Abraham and the promises God gives to Abraham. Chapter 13, Abraham's lot in life. That's his nephew, Lot, being part of his life. And believe me, when you have a Lot, if you have a guy like Lot in your life, you'd be rescuing him quite a bit. Chapter 14, Abraham rescues Lot. And he also rescues the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. Can you imagine that? Whew. You don't realize the kind of people that you're given a chance to before God overcomes and judges them. Chapter 15, God's covenant with Abraham, that he would give him... He says it several times where he promises him children and he promises him land and he promises him a future. And chapter 15 is a real big chapter for the covenant relationship with Abraham. And chapter 16, Abraham sort of loses his faith and he is talked into getting close to Hagar and Ishmael comes out. And it's the fruit of unbelief. If you want to have an example of what are the results of somebody not living by faith, Abraham and Sarah and Hagar and Ishmael coming out of the thing. But chapter 17, God turns it around and God gives Abraham laughter. What am I talking about? Isaac. Isaac, the word Isaac means laughter. When God says you're going to have a baby, and Abraham's laughing, he says, we already tried that, God. God says, and you're going to call him. You're going to call him laughter. Chapter 18, God shows up there and talks to Abraham and says, Abraham, I got to destroy Sodom. Lot was living in Sodom. And Abraham begins to negotiate and says, yeah, but you wouldn't kill anybody in there that's righteous, would you? Because Lot was righteous. And he works him all the way down from 50 down to 10, saying if there's 10 righteous people, you wouldn't destroy. And it's an amazing time of what we call supplication or intercessory prayer. Where you pray for somebody who deserves to be judged. And you keep praying and keep praying for him. So he intercedes for Sodom and Gomorrah. Chapter 19, God judges Sodom and Gomorrah. But he does get Lot and his family out of there. Chapter 20, Abraham the coward. Chapter 20, he goes down and he hides during a famine. Not just hides, but he's down there toward Egypt. He thinks that God can't take care of him, so he tries to operate by his own wits and tries to he tries to take care of his family, but he does it without God. And there he is. He looks around, and all the guys are eyeing his 89-year-old wife. It's a weird thought, but all I can say is this: a couple of things have to come to your mind. One is, we know the wages of sin is death. And if you understand, if you could understand just how wicked this world is without God, and I bet you they never saw an 89-year-old woman look as good as Sarah did. Number two, the people that Abraham was with were black. And Sarah was not white, but she was fair-skinned. And there's just something attractive about black guys and white women. And it was, she just stood out. And Abraham thought these guys were going to kill him to get his wife. So he all of a sudden, as a coward, instead of realizing, I better just get back up where I belong, or I better pray and ask for wisdom, he decides, this is just my sister. Now tell me, did that protect his wife? No. Who was he thinking of? Himself. That way he wouldn't get killed and they just take his wife. There's no sense in the stupidity of a person rebelling against God. I mean, you can't beat it with a stick. This is so. I wish they would make a real movie like the Bible. I would enjoy it thoroughly. So Abraham the coward, chapter 21, Isaac gets born, the son of promise. 22, Abraham is 13 years old. After just 13 years, guys, he's given back. And he takes him up to Mount Moriah. And just like Jesus asking Peter, do you love me? God asked Abraham, do you really love me? If you love me, you trust me. Chapter 23, the death and burial of Sarah. Sarah dies, and it's a big thing. Chapter 24, Abraham sends his servant, Eliezer, to go and find a wife for Isaac. Now, Isaac's an amazing guy. He allows his dad to choose his wife. And you know what? His dad doesn't even choose his wife. His dad asks his servant to find a wife. There's some big things in there. I mean, how far would you trust your dad? There was a very close relationship between Isaac and Abraham. Okay. Chapter 25, the birthright. Isaac gets this, Isaac, not Ishmael. Ishmael doesn't get the physical or the spiritual blessings from Abraham, only Isaac does. But guess what Isaac also gets? He gets an Adamic nature. He gets a sinful nature, just like his daddy. And as soon as Isaac is married, trouble comes, and he goes back to the same place that Abraham had been, down towards Egypt, where he's trying to hide from trouble. And everybody starts eyeing his wife, and guess what he does? He lies and says, she is my sister. Like father, like son. Then chapter 27, you have Jacob stealing the blessing, getting ahead of God, and having to run from God. Jacob at a place called Bethel. Now Bethel, if you write down, it means house of God. Now in chapter 28, Jacob, for the first time in his life, encounters God. He sees a ladder going up to heaven. He sees angels coming up and down. And he says, this must be the house of God. This must be the place of God. But you know, there's no surrender. It's not like, wow, God, what will you have me to do? Instead, you know, God, if you want me, if you want me to do anything for you, you do this for me. And that's how he negotiates with God. And so it's kind of funny. Our first encounters with God rarely are spiritual. Then chapter 29, you reap what you sow. As Jacob is under he's run from Esau because Esau is trying to steal. Esau is trying to kill him. When Jacob is over in his uncle's farm, he meets his match. Jacob and Laban are right for each other. Laban, because Laban is a hustler just like Jacob is. Laban's a liar just like Jacob is. Laban is out to make a fast buck just like Jacob is. And the two of them knock heads. Jacob has a real hard time, except God does bless him, but he has a very hard time. Jacob's full quiver. During chapter 30, you have Jacob. He's got ultimately four women. Two of them wives, two of them concubines. They ultimately become all four wives. And he ends up with 13 children, 12 sons and one daughter. And can you imagine his breakfast table? I think that's hilarious, all right? Can you imagine fighting over the remote? Can you imagine fighting over the toilet, trying to get to the bathroom? All right, well, Jacob's got a full quiver if anybody's got one. And he finally breaks free. Laban won't let him go, but he finally does get away in chapter 31. And when he's finally away, on his way back home, God meets with him in fear. Jacob is able to deal with God with the right attitude, and that's where he gets converted. And his name is changed to Israel. Jacob means hustler, deceiver, supplanter, but Israel means prince with God. Having power with God. Chapter 33, Jacob reconciles with Esau. Israel, this little group now, they get in trouble. Dinah, which is the only daughter, she's enamored. She's just enthralled by the way that all the Canaanite girls dress and all the Canaanite guys act. And she goes down to the proverbial mall to go have a look-see at all of the life that she's been missing, being protected by her daddy and by her brothers. And while she's out there, a guy takes her, lures her, sweet talks her, and then violates her and holds on to her. What's funny is he's got her in his house, and then he sends a letter to Jacob and says, "Jacob, I want you to let me marry your daughter." Now, this daughter's probably no more than 16 years old. And man, the brothers find out about this, and two of the brothers, Simeon and Levi, they kill the entire village. And you know, it was wrong what they did in anger. I mean, I can understand how they feel, but you just don't do that. So they had trouble, and it created a major problem. You two wrongs don't make a right. And so they took it. There was major trouble in Canaan land. Finally, Jacob has to get out of there, and finally gets home. One thing to note is he gets home, but his mom's gone. His dad is still alive, but his mom is dead. Then we come through in chapter 36, Esau. God gives time to show Ishmael's family history and where his descendants go, and shows where Esau's family history goes and what they become part of. You know, every time he does that, God is saying, "I'm giving these guys a chance, and they might sense that I'm giving them an opportunity to come back to me." Esau could have come right with God. He doesn't. Ishmael could have come right with God, and he doesn't. It's just funny how hard-headed we are. Well, God gives them lots of newspaper space, gives them a lot of time to show you that generation to generation, they don't seek God. Then we've got chapter 37 begins, I think, the greatest type of Jesus Christ in the entire Bible. His name is Joseph. We learned about him at youth camp. Joseph the dreamer, he has these dreams, upsets his brothers intensely. Chapter 38, there's a diversion. As soon as Joseph is sold off in slavery, then God talks about Judah. And Judah gets into some serious, serious sin. But he comes right. Now, one of the neat things is, I wish we could talk about this for a month. The first son of Jacob was who? Does anybody know? Reuben, okay? And Reuben messed around with one of Jacob's wives, actually one of his concubines, sexually messed around with. And he forfeited God's blessing. God could not bless him or use him as the firstborn. It moved on to the next son, okay? And Judah almost blows it. I think the second son was Simeon, no? Or maybe it was Levi? And because of the murder, my brain's not... I just remember the next son, I believe it was Levi, he blew the ability to be used of God for... God's blessing to Abraham was going to be passed on from generation to generation until the promised Messiah. So God would pass it on only to somebody who was right with God. And it passed it passed from Abraham to Isaac, not to Ishmael, and from Isaac to Jacob, and Jacob was now supposed to go to Reuben. Reuben forfeits it. Levi forfeits it because he murders a whole town. The next person is Judah. And guess what the devil wants to do? He tries to get Judah to commit a sin so that God cannot use him now. But even in his sin, Judah does, one of the few, get right with God. And it shows forgiveness, but it also shows where our Lord, why he comes through Judah and not through Levi, which would have been made him a Levitical priest. He comes through Judah. All right, so that whole chapter is a great thing of how stupid Judah was for almost throwing away the blessing of God. Yes.
He tried to
what?
He tried to escape this
chance. No, come on in. Judah did not. No, God, Judah didn't know what was going on. Satan knew what was going on, and Satan was trying to stop. Mom, we need another wash rag. I'm afraid. That's all right. Just spill some coffee. Yeah. Judah did not know all of the things that were going on with God in the background. Okay, all he knew was all this. He was a grown man, and the long and the short of it is, what should have passed first to the firstborn. There's a lot of things in the Bible about the firstborn of the family. He inherited the farm, and usually was the father's favorite son, and so on and so forth. It was supposed to go to Reuben, but Reuben blew it. It passes the spiritual blessing, the promise of the Messiah would pass to Levi now. But Levi blew it. Out of anger, he slaughters an entire village. So God can't use him now. Just like God couldn't use David to build the temple. If you ever read in there in 2 Chronicles and in 1 Kings, God, David desperately wanted to build the temple, right? He wanted to build this monument to God before he died, and God said, no, you are a bloody man, you're a warrior, you're a killer. I need a man of peace to build my temple. So it had to pass to his son. So Levi could not be used to bring forth the Messiah, all right, in this particular thing. So it passes to Judah, and the devil was trying to derail Judah from being used of God. But the only difference between Judah and Levi and Reuben was Judah got right. There's no perfect person. But each time that God gets you and pulls you down, the question is, will you let God pull you back up? Every time the devil pulls you down, don't stay down. Because when you stay down, the devil wins. That's why grace is more powerful. Grace can reach down and pick you up and fix you. So that God can use you again, all right?
Is this sin mentioned?
It's sexual sin. Okay. Now, let's keep going on. So God overcomes the sins of Judah by getting him humble. Chapter 39, Joseph gets test after test after test from God. It is not Potiphar, it's not Pharaoh he's fighting, it's not his brothers he's fighting. Who is dealing with Joseph? It is God making a tremendous type of his son. Never forget, you don't have to worry about the devil. You don't have to worry about your neighbor. You don't have to worry about your wife, your son, your daughter. You have to worry about God. Okay? And that's where chapter 39, Joseph is tested by God and refined by God. Dream fulfilled. Chapter 42, you ought to know that filing cabinet has all of the fulfillment of Joseph's dreams. What were Joseph's dreams? That his brothers would be bowing in front of him. That even his mother and his father would be honoring him. And he didn't understand what his dreams meant, but all of a sudden his dreams were fulfilled. Chapter 43, starvation versus humiliation. There's his brothers having to choose. Are we going to starve out of pride, or are we going to humiliate ourselves and humble ourselves and go back to Egypt? Stand before that man. They didn't know that Joseph was... Here, Mom, you want a pen?
No, I was looking for the sisters.
Okay, they're behind her on her left. His brothers did not know that this was Joseph that they were looking at. And okay, all right. They didn't know that it was Joseph they were looking at. And so to go back before this man would be very humiliating. And God, his biggest test of you is, will you humble yourself? If he can get you to humble yourself, every other test will fly. So Joseph's brothers learned their lesson. Chapter 44, the final test for Joseph's brethren, they lose their youngest brother. Their youngest brother's Benjamin. And their youngest brother is actually a stepbrother. If you remember, there are four wives there, Jacob. So there, some of them are related mother and daddy. Some of them are only related just by their daddy. Benjamin is the only other son born to Rachel, which was Jacob's favorite wife, or first wife, okay? And Benjamin's brother was who?
Joseph.
And so when Joseph takes Benjamin, he says, I'm putting him in prison. I'm going ahead of myself. He takes Simeon and puts him in prison and says, bring me Benjamin. And they says, if we bring Benjamin, it will kill our father. What a thought. I mean, the fact that they sold their other brother didn't bother them, you know, but now they're finally bothered. Okay, but that was God humbling them, and it was also, this was the final test. Will they just humble themselves and actually bring this and risk? Here's the great truth. Are they going to risk something to finally do right? See, they were willing to risk their other brother, Joseph, to the dogs, you know. But now they're going to risk to trust that God was in charge. And when they bring Benjamin, guess what Joseph does? He reveals himself. And there's a great application. There are more messages you could preach in a lifetime just in those 50 chapters. And one of them is God reveals himself in a special way to somebody who gives up what's precious. When you give your plans to the Lord, when you give your dreams, when everything is given to God, that's when Joseph, when they brought that thing that could potentially ruin their life and ruin their history, ruin their dad, ruin everything, when they finally gave it to Joseph and brought him there, Joseph says, it's me. I'm Joseph. And where they could have been, you know, it could have been that he would take revenge on them. And you know how many times have you come to God and say, God, you ought to kill me because of some sin in your life? Do you come to realize, God still loves me and he just wants to reveal himself as mightier and mightier? All right. Joseph is alive, chapter 45, chapter 46. All of Jacob and his family move down to Egypt. And they're in Egypt, but they don't become Egyptians. And to this day, here you got South Africans. They move to Ireland. And guess what? They stay South Africa. It's really obnoxious, you know. But it's true. They keep a little bit of their identity. Now, let me just say this. I know you're South African. I know I'm Texan. My wife's Hoosier. Mexican? That was funny. Slapping, that's what he was saying. Anyway, but once we become Christian, all of those things change, all right? You may like South African food, and Paul likes North Cork food. I don't know what that is. Chips, fish and chips. You may like German food, but we became Christian. But I'm just trying to show you, this was the identity of Jacob and his little family. They kept that identity, even though they lived and they surrounded by the Egyptians. And we as Christians need to do that. In our world, we may live in Ireland, we may live in this world, but we need to keep our Christian identity. And that's what they did. They were in the world, but they didn't get their identity from the world. The wisdom of Joseph, chapter 47. He looks at the situation, God tells him, we need to start saving up for the next 7 years of plenty before the famine comes. A very wise man. The Jacob blessing of Joseph's son, Jacob. Joseph's got two boys that he had while he was away from his family, and Jacob passes a special blessing on them. Jacob then, chapter 49, you ought to read it and see how much it has come true back 2,000 years before Christ, and here it is almost 4,000 years after those blessings and those prophecies, and they're coming true on the money. And then chapter 50, the end of an era. Joseph. Now, in the book of Genesis, it's funny. It begins with, in the beginning, God, and the book of Genesis ends in chapter 50, in a coffin. That's a man for you. Starts off right and ends up dead. All right, you have some study questions for next week. Did I give you any questions for this past week in Genesis?
No.
No, only in Revelation. All right, we will stop there and take a break.
Are those questions on them?